Thomas Crumpler, attorney for appellant, plaintiff below, Maria Martinez. May it please the court, the lower court's decision in this case totally disregarded this court's long-standing precedent in the area of forum non-convenes, and instead substituted a totally new and unprecedented subjective test. A test, if not reversed and rejected in this case, will create great uncertainty for all potential plaintiffs who would otherwise avail themselves of the Delaware system in our courts. The court below at page 79 and 80 admitted after going through all the well-established cryo-made factors that it was, quote, hard-pressed to distinguish the circumstances here from those in cases like Candlewood, In Re Asbestos, and others that have declined to find overwhelming hardship. The court goes
Let's assume for a moment that your view of the Save Our Law on forum non-convenience is correct. And let's assume for the sake of argument that the focus on forum non-convenience by the trial court is inconsistent with that law. There are several other bases on which the trial judge decided this case. And in particular, what I have a question about is the extent to which negligence must be pled with particularity under the Superior Court rule, and the relationship between that call for particularity and, say, in corporate law, the rule that fraud must be pleaded with particularity. Can you give me a better feel than I believe I currently have for the extent to which negligence must be pled with particularity?
The rules say pled with particularity. At the same time, they say even vague allegations are sufficient. I mean, our case law says that. This case, and in fact, the standing order in asbestos, which actually came forward to try to have some more detail, we follow there. And one of the things the court pointed out, and the lower court had actually signed the standing order, we have to allege who the employer was at the time of the exposure. That's why we allege we had a section employment exposure and allege the Argentina company, DASA, was the employer. We had to allege where the exposure took place, what the job of the plaintiff was at the exposure. And we did all of that. Those are the requirements in terms of under asbestos law and under the benzene case, which was a case that said you needed more particularity and wanted the actual details of exposure. That has been the long-standing view of the court. With regard to our allegations, we did more than simply say DuPont was negligent. We said how they were negligent. We said they were negligent in providing improper safety services, almost like you hire an outside safety company to want to come in and say, let's evaluate the procedures at our plant. DuPont was negligent in that. And we go through specifically in terms of their actions, the audits that they did, the protocols that they came in. DuPont specifically provided raw asbestos to the plant. So there is, I think, greater particularity than you need and that you see in most negligence cases. The key aspect in terms of particularity is fair notice to DuPont. Very clear that when we adopted the modern rules of notice procedure, that you're not dealing with the merits of the case to really try to look at the facts. It used to be many years ago you had fact pleading, and almost motion to dismiss was a way to get rid of frivolous cases, cases with no basis in fact. Well, summary judgment is now that way to do that.
Well, let me give you a couple examples and see if you can help me understand it. You say, by way of example, in your complaint, and I'll focus on paragraphs 22 and 23, and I'm honestly just picking these at random as two paragraphs that are similar to others. Various employees were sent for training in facilities in the United States and then returned to Argentina. Doesn't say anything about the nature of the training, the extent to which it was unreasonable, defective, fell below some stated standard. Then you say they sent manuals and newsletters that were received and translated from English to Spanish. Well, there's no significance that attaches to that. That's why it's maybe not the same as saying in an automobile accident case the defendant drove her automobile carelessly and proximately caused injuries to the plaintiff. without describing how it was driven in a way that would be considered careless. But it sounds awful vague to me.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's any different than the auto accident case. The auto accident case is notice. The defendant, when sued, wants to know, what are you claiming I did wrong? Are you claiming I ran the red light? Are you claiming I drove an unsafe speed? You don't have to say the speed.
But you can't just say careless.
You go into more, yes, you have to say more than what is the nature of the negligence? What is the basis of the negligence? If all we had said was DuPont was negligent and their negligence caused the injuries here, that would not be pled with particularity. We have to say what is the nature of their negligence? And we explained that the nature of their negligence was a variety of their own distinct acts, including specifically the providing of improper safety services.
Okay, so the one of the rulings in the court's opinion was that the complaint didn't put DuPont on notice of what conduct or misconduct was being charged with. Your response is the complaint did provide such notice. The court's second ruling was, even if it did provide notice, there's no inference of negligence that can be rationally drawn from the pled facts. What is your response to that argument? I think,
Your Honor,
footnote that that was, you know, I'm just echoing a concern that the Chief Justice expressed in his earlier question.
Certainly, and let me just say that DuPont doesn't point out that this complaint is different than other asbestos complaints and other complaints that have been done. So, I mean, it's far more detailed. But in answer to your question, Justice Jacobs, at number 10 and number 26 and number 42, those are summaries where we say that all of these actions of DuPont, the various actions that we have pled, cause the injuries. So the judge below said that we alleged various things, such as the safety manuals, but we don't tie the safety manuals to the injury. There was no allegation that made that connection. And I just read to the court.
Or the training or the materials.
Yeah,
because all 10 says, similarly to my example of the defendant operated her motor vehicle carelessly and proximately caused damage to the plaintiff, 10 only says separate and distinct tortuous conduct caused injury. Asbestos exposure, asbestos disease, each and all of it is fully set forth herein. But and again, the example of they delivered asbestos. Well, what's the consequence alleged of the negligence in delivering the asbestos?
Your Honor, you have to read the complaint as a whole. And 10 is a summary that says all of the actions that we are listing herein following are do cause the problems, and then we give specific examples. After each example, we do not then say it caused it. We've already said we are listing the various particulars that cause the exposure and cause the disease. And
well,
again,
maybe another way of looking at it is this: there's an allegation that DuPont provided training manuals, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is there an allegation that says those training manuals said X, and that was a form of negligence because it didn't mention having to wear masks, or it didn't do this, or it didn't do that?
We do not go into the we say that there were training manuals. These training manuals were unsafe, and the use of those unsafe training manuals caused injury. We do not go into detail as to the specifics of the training manuals. That goes beyond notice pleading.
Okay,
notice
but wait, stop. To say that a training manual is unsafe. Unsafe in what regard? Did it fail to tell people something they ought to know? Did it misinform them? So that they acted in a way that was dangerous? Unsafe is a conclusion, and it's a vague conclusion at that.
Your Honor, we say in our complaint, looking at the complaint as a whole, said the did not provide warnings, did not tell the dangers of it. It is certainly a fair reading that these safety manuals do not contain warnings if you look at the entire complaint. The complaint says they did unsafe things. Here are aspects of the unsafe things that they did. They had inadequate information about the dangers of asbestos, misleading information about the dangers of asbestos, lack of warnings. So you're
and so you're saying that all of those acts, if you will, are to be understood were effective through training manuals and other things that you identify.
Absolutely.
So even though the training manual discussion doesn't say the training manuals failed to warn about the hazard of asbestos, failed to advise you how to use it properly, you know, and so on, there's nothing about that, but we're supposed to infer that from the fact that as a general matter you're saying DuPont failed to warn and failed to properly instruct and so forth.
Not just infer. I mean, there is paragraph 71 where we again go into detail that they were without any cautions or safeguards. What we simply, you have to look at the entire complaint. What is our entire theory of the case, which was that DuPont provided inadequate, one of the major ones, DuPont provided inadequate safety information, and we go through in terms of how that is inadequate, lack of warning, improper discussion about the dangers. We simply, when we list an example of how they did it, safety manuals, training procedures, a variety of things, we don't repeat in each listing, but it's elsewhere in the complaint.
Mr. Crumpler, let me start with a factual question. Mm-hmm. Does the complaint allege that, the complaint does allege that DuPont was five levels removed from the Argentinian, Mr. Rocha's Argentinian employer, correct?
The complaint does not go through the corporate history. We did not know the particular, we knew DuPont was not the employer. We knew DuPont was owned the subsidiary, but the fact
the opinion says that it's a fifth generation grandparent. Is that correct or not?
It is correct.
Okay. Does the complaint allege whether these different levels of ownership were 100% in each case, or whether there were outside investors?
There are no outside investors.
Okay, so we're talking about a pyramid with DuPont at the top, the Argentinian corporation at the bottom, and 100% ownership at each level?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So there are two ways to, I guess, theorize about a breach of duty here. One would be that DuPont, although it had the power to control, or as you would allege, miscontrol, the actions of the fifth-level employee exercised that power in some way. That is, it caused the employer to do something that the employer should not have done, or to fail to do something the employer should have done. That's one way to look at it. The other way is, without regard to control, DuPont itself committed acts or omissions that created an independent duty going down five levels. I'm not sure which concept we're dealing with here.
We're dealing with both, but the second one predominantly. It's the best way to do this, and I even asked their expert at the hearing, assume that a company, the plant, the Argentina plant, retained the services of an independent company to provide safety services. They wanted advice, and they provided negligent safety services. Would the employee of that company have the right to sue that third party? And
he
said yes.
So it's not primarily a case where you claim that the parent five steps removed controlled the subsidiary.
No, it is not. There are allegations that deal with that. But our primary one, and what we begin, is its own distinct actions, and that goes with Boggs versus Blue Diamond, and that's part of the problem the court had below. They were fixated on this direct participation that DuPont somehow came in and was running the operation, almost kind of flattening the corporate structure. There is one reference at the end of the complaint to DuPont participated, EI DuPont participated in certain management things. But the overwhelming is no different than if this was XYZ safety services.
Gratuitously injecting itself into the work practices at the Argentinian sublevel. Is that?
Yes, I mean, and even their own expert said that it was a valid cause of action if DuPont assumed the safety responsibilities. And he agreed with me that whether they assumed it, that was a question of fact. One key aspect, and I just have a few minutes left on my rebuttal, that I have to go time and time again, is the key question before the court was, is this a valid cause of action under Argentine law? Not only did our expert, who was the author of the commentary that all judges under the direction of the Supreme Court, the leading professor and president of the Court of Appeals, and our other expert, who's in charge of the largest insurance company, say that it had a valid cause of action, but DuPont's own expert on four different aspects of the complaint said, yes, it pled a valid cause of action. So if DuPont's own expert understands it pleads a valid cause of action, really, to summarize what the court got wrong, and if you look at the entire opinion, what the court says below repeatedly is not that DuPont didn't understand what the case was about. I mean, shipping raw asbestos is pretty clear and pretty definite. Not that the form was wrong. Not that we hadn't pled a proper case under Argentine law. It's the court below felt we had sued the wrong party. The court below thought that all we were doing was going after DuPont Argentina, but we were doing it under the form of DuPont. That's not what our complaint says. That's not making it very clear.
Okay, so the way you're conceptualizing the case, the complaint states in a particularized way misconduct that all experts agreed stated a cause of action under Argentine law.
That's correct.
That being the case, an Argentine court would entertain the claim, and the only issue then becomes one of forum nonconvenience.
That's correct.
Argentine court would entertain the claim, then this court should entertain the claim, or the superior court should entertain the claim, because it's a transitory cause of action.
Absolutely. And I might just say, in terms of entertaining the complaint, one difference between Eisen and some of the other cases is DuPont has never admitted that they would subject EI DuPont to subject themselves to jurisdiction in Argentina. So there is a question as to whether this case against Delaware DuPont, and we did it because of the actions that we felt originated from here in Delaware, could be maintained by my plaintiffs. That is still not clear.
You want to save your last
I do, minutes? I do. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jack Phillips on behalf of EI DuPont Dina Moores. With me in the courtroom is David Bilson, an associate in my office, who worked on the briefing. Your Honors, stripped of the verbiage and labels, this complaint is nothing more than a complaint trying to pierce the corporate veil or plead an alter ego count. As a conceptual matter, when one is pleading to pierce the corporate veil or to allege alter ego, one pleads multiple instances of the parent's general involvement in the daily operations of the subsidiary. On the other hand, when one wants to plead direct liability, one must plead specific actions that cause specific harm in a specific manner to a specific person. The plaintiff here did the former, but not the latter.
Before you get too deeply into that, I would like you to address the last point that Mr. Crumpler made, and that is that the complaint stated a cause or states a cause of action under Argentine law. What did the court find in that regard, and what does the record show?
The record, in DuPont's opinion, Your Honor, shows that, first of all, let me back up to answer your question. Mr. Crumpler asserts that both experts opined that the complaint states a cause of action. That's not the job of the experts. That is the sole province of the trial court. The experts, you know, can only tell you what tries to explain what the law is. They cannot arrive at the final conclusion. That is the trial court's job.
So we're talking about foreign law, and experts can give their opinion as to what the foreign law is.
Exactly, but they cannot then pass on whether or not the complaint meets that. That is the trial court's duty and then up to this court.
Why is that?
Because it's the sole province of the court, Your Honor, not the expert. The expert can't pass on the final determination.
But why can't an expert, in addition to saying Argentina law is X, say that under Argentina law, this complaint would pass muster and state a cause of action for Y?
We believe that that's the sole province of the trial court.
Well, I'm not saying the trial court has to accept that necessarily, but why isn't that a valid expert opinion on what the law is?
The expert offered that opinion. The trial court rejected it. The trial court is sitting in the position of evaluating all of these allegations, evaluating the testimony that it heard, and then arriving at a conclusion. The trial court did that and rejected that.
Well, is it correct that all of the experts testified that the facts alleged in the complaint would give rise to a cognizable cause of action under Argentine law?
It's correct that the plaintiff's expert said that, Your Honor, but it's not correct that DuPont's expert said that. DuPont's expert was asked a different question. First of all, DuPont's expert was asked, if you assume that DuPont Argentina hired a safety contractor and that safety contractor provided negligent advice, would that state a cause of action? That's not what happened here. In considering this, you must keep in mind what these parties are. These parties are a parent and a subsidiary. Parents often interact with their subsidiaries. They provide services, they provide advice, but that's not the same thing as hiring a contractor. DuPont USA was not hired as a contractor to provide information and advice to DuPont Argentina.
You're saying that DuPont's expert did not opine that a cause of action under Argentine law was stated. Is that true?
That's what I'm saying, Your Honor.
Okay, and what did the lower court find in that narrow regard?
Well,
Did the court find that a cause of action was stated, wasn't stated, or none of the above?
Well, I think when you read through the opinion, the lower court rejected counts, there would be 3, 4, 5, and 7 by granting summary judgment and granted a motion to dismiss on counts 1 and 6, yeah. Obviously rejecting the whatever testimony was offered by the experts.
Are you saying that the court didn't specifically address that question?
I think the court addressed that question simply by saying that these counts don't state a cause of action.
Under Argentine law?
Under Argentine law. But, Your Honors, if you look at how this complaint was pled, in counts 3, 4, 5, and 7, the plaintiff makes traditional premises liability and employer liability allegations against DuPont USA as if DuPont USA was the owner and operator of the plant and as if it was the employer of the decedent. That's simply not the case. They then go on to admit that DuPont USA was not the owner. DuPont Argentine was the owner, operator, and employer. If you look at how they pled their counts of negligence and their count of willful conduct, paragraph 56 and paragraph 80, they first begin by saying DuPont USA required plaintiff's decedent to work with asbestos in an unsafe manner. How does DuPont USA require the decedent, an employee of an Argentine company, to do anything? The only way it could require that to happen would be under a veil piercing or alter ego theory.
Well, the other side disclaims reliance on those theories, and in response to my questions, appeared to argue that the main thrust of its claim here is that DuPont, without exercising any control over its fifth level subsidiary, gratuitously became involved in the work activities at that level and committed tortious acts.
Right. What Mr. Crumpler is in essence saying here and in his complaint is that he assumes a duty. He is assuming that DuPont USA owed a duty. DuPont USA didn't owe a duty. DuPont USA is a parent. That parent is allowed to interact with its subsidiary. That's all that happened here. This is the normal course of interaction. But that does not mean a duty existed to protect Mr. Roca in any manner.
Well, wait a second. Are you saying that a manufacturer of asbestos can sell that to a third party and not include any warnings about the hazardous nature of it or how to properly handle it or whatever, and that wouldn't there wouldn't be a cause of action against that manufacturer for having put this dangerous product in the market without proper warnings?
No, we're not saying that. But what I am saying is that DuPont USA is not the manufacturer of asbestos or asbestos-containing products. Those products were not sold to this entity. And if you read the complaint, every one of these allegations, every one of them, if you look at it, if you look at counts 4 and 7, they then go on from their veil-piercing theory to a nonfeasance theory. Failed to, let me just read a couple of these, failed to require and advise of hygiene practice, failed to provide adequate instruction, failed to provide warning, failed to adequately test.
Okay, let me interrupt because I'm now confused. I thought the allegation is that DuPont provided the asbestos to this Argentine plant.
The paragraph 11 of the complaint says DuPont provided raw asbestos or provided the money to the subsidiary to buy raw asbestos. That argument, that assertion in the alternative is not really a clear assertion. And it's pled that way to avoid a Rule 11 problem. There is no way they're going to be able to substantiate such a claim. This is like saying it's either going to rain or it's not going to rain. But that's not an allegation that it's going to rain. So all they've said is something that they either did this or they gave them the money. Giving them the money, they can buy anything they want with the money, and that's not a tort.
But there's no doubt that DuPont Argentina bought asbestos-containing products. But I thought DuPont also provided training manuals. That's not alleged either?
That's alleged that they provided training manuals. It's not alleged as to what those training manuals said. It's not alleged how those training manuals then resulted in an injury to Mr. Rorca.
But those were training manuals with respect to the way to deal with asbestos?
Not that it's alleged in the complaint and not that we're put on notice of. If you look at paragraphs 18 through 25, all you will see is a litany of things that don't plead a direct cause of action. It is very simple when you look at these to understand that 18, they conducted hygiene audits, 19, monitored the production, 20, traveled to the plant and monitored production, 21, provided engineering training, 22, sent people for training to the United States, 23, provided manuals, 24, provided information from Stein Haskell Laboratories. Doesn't say what information was provided. Doesn't say that any of these things related to asbestos, the use of asbestos.
Well, so looking at trying to grasp the big picture here.
Yes, sir.
If in order to conclude that that alleged conduct or any portion of it breached a duty owed to the employee, it would either have to be because DuPont actively controlled the Argentine subsidiary and therefore stepped into the shoes of that subsidiary as employer, or voluntarily assumed the duty without controlling the employer.
Right. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't mean to interrupt. But under the first scenario, that's a veil-piercing or alter ego argument that is not properly brought in superior court. So they've got no choice but then to assert that it's the...
Well, it isn't a veil-piercing argument, if there are facts that show that DuPont actually dictated...
Well, then it's an alter ego argument.
I'm sorry?
Then it's an alter ego argument.
Maybe that.
Is it correct? Counts 1 and 7 of the complaint were identified by the trial judge as counts based on the so-called direct participant theory?
Counts 1 and 6, I believe, Your Honor, yes.
Didn't she say that's not recognized under Argentine law, that theory of law?
She did say that because all the experts agreed, Your Honor, that a direct participation theory of liability is not necessary under Argentine law because this plaintiff has the right to sue its employer. The direct participation theory of liability was designed or came into existence as a way to avoid the workers' comp bar. But under Argentina law, they can bring not only a workers' comp claim, but also a tort claim against the employer. So there's no need for the direct participation theory of liability. So what is really happening here, Your Honor, if you think about the conceptual pleading, that is that they have pled multiple instances of DuPont USA involvement in the subsidiary's activities. Those are veil-piercing and alter ego theories. They have not pled that the specific act that caused the specific harm in a specific manner to this plaintiff. And as a consequence of that, the trial court below concluded that since there's no direct participation theory of liability, that the pleadings are inadequate. And as a result of those pleading deficiencies, they dismissed this case.
So let me just see if I have it right. To the extent the complaint can be read to allege that DuPont was actively controlling the activities of its Argentine subsidiary, that theory does not state a cause of action because it amounts to veil piercing, which the Superior Court would have no jurisdiction to entertain in the first place. Secondly, to the extent that the complaint can be read to allege that DuPont was directly participating, that is, whether you call it assuming a duty that the employer would otherwise have or gratuitously injecting itself into the employer-employee relationship, that theory is not recognized under Argentine law, and therefore there's no cause of action.
Yes,
is that a fair summary?
Yes. And what's more, the manner in which that is pled under the second theory is pled in a manner that assumes a duty exists without establishing or pleading facts to establish a duty exists, and then makes conclusory allegations that that duty, that assumed duty, was breached. There's nothing in the complaint to satisfy that. But if this court wants to look beyond the pleading deficiencies, it cannot do so without examining the subsidiary's conduct. The plaintiff admits that DuPont Argentina was the owner and operator of the plant and employer of plaintiff's decedent. It clearly had some control over and participated in the wrongful conduct that allegedly harmed the plaintiff. In fact, it is clear that the alleged injury could not have occurred but for the action of DuPont Argentina. Therefore, its conduct is inextricably intertwined with DuPont USA's alleged conduct. Thus, DuPont Argentina was a primary or active participant, which under Rule 19 makes them a necessary and indispensable party.
Can you explain to me the distinction between reaching the threshold of an indispensable party and simply choosing not to include a joint tortfeasor as a co-defendant?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, under Rule 19A, that determines whether or not a party is necessary. Then under 19B, you determine whether or not the party is indispensable. And if there's a very distinct and specific body of case law that has arisen in the context of deciding whether or not a subsidiary is an indispensable party in a suit against a parent involving that subsidiary's actions. When a subsidiary's conduct is the primary or active, when the subsidiary is a primary or active participant in the parent's alleged wrongful conduct, the subsidiary is necessary and indispensable. That's what the cases hold that DuPont has relied upon.
Indispensable is a shorthand for the conclusion that the action cannot fairly proceed in the absence of the necessary party?
Yes, Your Honor, under 19B.
But isn't that exactly what at least appellants claim is not what they're alleging? In other words, that what the trial court got mistaken about was the view that this was all an attempt to stand in the place of the Argentine corporation, and that wasn't what their claim was. Their claim was that DuPont itself engaged in behavior that was tortious.
But again, Your Honor, you do not need to accept their representations of, you know, the labels they want to put on this. What they have pled is that DuPont Argentina was intimately involved in whatever injuries allegedly occurred to this plaintiff.
Okay, well, let me put it another way. If we were to find that the complaint alleges that DuPont itself independently engaged in conduct that could state a claim for tortious conduct, then wouldn't it follow that the indispensable party issue would be removed?
No.
Why not?
Because DuPont, whatever conduct DuPont, you know, had, whatever DuPont did, it could only have caused injury to plaintiff if DuPont Argentina participated in some manner. And as a result of that, the activity of DuPont Argentina is inextricably intertwined. If you look at this complaint, there is no doubt that DuPont Argentina is the owner and operator of the plant and the employer. That means that whatever happened to Mr. Roca happened because they either did something wrong or allowed somebody else to do something that they should not have allowed, which makes them an active participant. So, the
or a joint tortfeasor.
Pardon me?
Or a joint tortfeasor.
Right, but this is not your typical joint tortfeasor case, Your Honor. In a typical joint tortfeasor case, you have two separate parties that independently injure the plaintiff. These parties did not independently or separately injure the plaintiff. The activities are intertwined. The activities combined are what injured this plaintiff.
Well, even if there is this a plausibly pleaded theory that DuPont has direct responsibility for the harm done to the plaintiff, if that cause of action is not recognized under Argentine law, why do we care? Because Argentine law is what applies to this case.
I agree, Your Honor. I don't think
the other issues are simply procedural from our perspective.
Well,
but the fundamental law that applies is the Argentine law.
But as in answer to Justice Berger's concern, Your Honor, I think that you could reach the indispensable party issue because it's clear that it's the combined action. Even if you accept the plaintiff's allegations, it's clear that the combined actions are what caused the injury.
Well, what is the basis for the trial judge's conclusion that a theory that DuPont directly caused, apart from anything DuPont Argentina did, directly caused tortiously the harm to the plaintiff? What is the basis for her to say that's not recognized as a cause of action under Argentine law?
The basis was that it wasn't properly pled. The pleadings, as I say, assumed a duty without establishing any facts or pleading any facts to make sure that there's a duty that was owed, and then speciously allege a violation of the duty.
Are you saying that if it had been properly pleaded, it would be recognized as a cause of action under Argentine law?
I'm saying, Your Honor, that if it were properly pled, some of this would not be a problem. But it's not properly pled, and if you accept that it were properly pled, you have an indispensable party argument and problem. The plaintiff has that.
If we agree that there's no cause of action under Argentine law, we don't need to get to either the indispensable party or the firm nonconvenience issues. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So only if we disagree with the trial judge on the cause of action ruling do we need to get to this.
That's correct. But under plaintiff's theory, there would never be a joint tortfeasor case where the absent party was indispensable, and that can't possibly be
there's
the law.
There's no claim here, is there, that these are that the DuPont and its Argentine subsidiary were joint tortfeasors?
Am I
right or wrong?
No, there's no claim. Okay. No such claim.
Thank you very much,
Your Honor. May I have just 1 minute on forum nonconvenience?
Your time's up.
Thank you.
With regard to the question of does it plead under Argentine law, A19 of our appendix, this is when I'm questioning their expert, I say, I did paragraph 12, you see it specifically says DuPont provided safety services in a negligent manner, and I ask, would this constitute a valid claim under Argentine law? DuPont's expert said yes. He then said yes to 14, not with any assumptions, 12 and 14 he said it pled a valid cause under Argentine law.
But was it in the context of being something other than the parent of an Argentine subsidiary?
Yes, it was.
Was
yes,
it an
was.
Independent contract?
Independent. I asked
Does that make a difference?
It makes a difference, absolutely. And it gives us another basis. I think we have a basis under direct participation, but it gives us another basis. And that basis, which was our lead-off basis, which is its own distinct independent acts.
Well, is it correct that the trial judge found that your direct participation theory was not recognized under Argentine law?
She did, Your Honor, and I think that is wrong. But let me just say, for our other theory in terms of their own independent acts, she's silent on that. And she simply has to have, she decides what Argentine law is. She looks at experts. She has to point out something in Argentine law that would say this is not a basis. There is nothing in her opinion that explains why she rejects all the experts. With regard to pleading and the question of notice, if DuPont really didn't understand what we were dealing with, didn't understand this was an asbestos case, even though it says asbestos, they can make a request for a more definite statement. We need to not see the forest for the trees. The whole question, this pleading is no longer a game. If they truly don't understand what this is about, they can make a request for a more definite statement. Motions to amend are to be freely granted. That we do not favor dismissing the complaint simply because the form is not there. The key question is, did we plead a valid cause of action under Argentine law? Every single expert said we did. And the court could point out no basis other than she created her own special category, which was the U.S. direct participant case law, which she criticized our experts because they didn't know about that. That's not the test. It's not what is in America. It's what's in Argentina.
Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Please rise.